Anne Osborne, thank you so much for talking with me from Ontario, Canada, where you have snow falling down and we have no rain for too long. I'm really eager to talk with you during the holiday season because there's a lot of pictures of angels, but not much discussion. And I wanted to start by asking about your perception of those ethereal beings, we'll call them, that you've seen since a child. Tell us how that first started and what you saw.
Well, I always thought, so I didn't know that everybody didn't. My biggest awakening was not seeing them, but in figuring out that other people maybe didn't. And your topic about what do we do with angels at this time of year is near and dear to my heart because we do see the angels are all around us. Everyone has them. We all can experience them. They operate in our life and in our world. And so our task, our opportunity is to be aware of that. As a child, I always saw them. I didn't know what they were necessarily to begin with. I was really fortunate that I had a mom, a wonderful mom who could help me understand. She gave me language for a lot of this. And she also taught me that knowledge is knowing what is, and wisdom is knowing when to say it. So that was a huge help too, as I, went through life and evolved through that.
How did you see these angelic creatures and what influence did they have in your life? I mean, could you ask them for help and guidance?
Sure. I also grew up in the church. I grew up in the United Church of Canada, and which is a very liberal Christian church. And so we talked a lot about angels, so it just made perfect sense to me. Well, that's who they are. This is very ordinary. It was very ordinary for me.
What do they
Well,
look
how I see
like?
them. How I see them changes. And it depends on the situation and things like that. At first, I saw them as more typical angels because they were teaching me this is who we are, right? Oh, so if this is what I think an angel looks like, that's how I should see it. So it was very much tied in with that. At this point, it's very different. Sometimes I see them everywhere from great big energy fields to a shimmer, just a little shimmer, and I know they're there. But, over the years, we've developed a much easier communication as it changes. I almost never see faces on angels, but I don't seem to need to see faces. So maybe if that was really important to me, I would. Or for someone else who sees them, that may be very important. But that would be the one distinguishing. Almost always there's a shimmer to that energy. If it's angelic energy, there's almost always a shimmer.
What about color? If I'm aware of an angel when I'm doing a session with someone, it usually I'll see it as blue or some kind of color.
Okay, they can come with different colors. The colors to me are also informative. So if it's a blue angel, it's carrying a certain meaning. If it's an angel that is kind of opalescent, that's a there's a different kind of meaning with that. So I think it's part of them giving us information, helping us to understand what they're bringing to us and what they want us to know.
What's an example of something specific that you learned from an angel and something that you asked for that they help you achieve? Something specific.
Well, one of my very first very specific examples of, well, it wasn't the first, it was a very clear example, I guess. I was driving at one point in time, and I was coming up to an intersection. There was a big row of great big trucks beside me on the left. They were waiting to turn left. I was going to go straight through the intersection, and I heard a voice that said very clearly, "Brake now." And in my head, I went into this, well, I don't need to brake. I have the right of way. I've got a green light. And the brake now. I hit the brakes, and a car who could not have seen me went through the intersection and would have hit me. And I just, thank you very much. And so that was, to me, that was just such a beautifully clear. They said two words twice. That was it. And it changed everything. So, for me, that was that. Oftentimes I ask angels for help. They help in everything from very practical ways. I really need to find information on this. I really need help with this. And all of a sudden you just get this idea. You know, maybe I should look here. Maybe I should look there. To very subtle ways that only probably in hindsight you think back and you think, ooh, bet that was a nudge. But that was just a nudge in the right direction. Yeah.
In books by Doreen Virtue and people like that, they're very go into detail that there's these kingdoms of angelic beings and they have different names. Like there's Michael and there's Raphael. Do you think that is accurate? Is there this kind of specific kingdom of angels that are non-human spirits? What do you think about that?
I think that angels have never incarnated on this earth. So they are messengers, and that's their job. They're messengers from God. I don't get into the whole hierarchy of angels very much because when they come to me, they usually come to me either to help me or to help somebody that I'm working with. And it doesn't matter where they fit in that because they know they have something to offer. They know that they are the right angel, the right energy to help that person. Sometimes I don't get their names. Sometimes they give me a name, but I think that when they give us a name, they're giving us a name so that we know how to connect with them again. Names hold energy. And so if you say to somebody, this is, angel, and it can be any name. It's not just the list of names that we get, you know, that are typical. Everybody sort of thinks they want to have one of the archangels. You know, we're going to bring in the big guns. And it's like, no, pretty much any angel that is here for you is wonderful. But it gives you a way of saying, oh, if I want to connect and talk to this angel again, I'm going to ask for, you know, Enoch or Sam or whoever it is. Yeah.
It's kind of like a password or something.
Yeah, exactly. It's just an easy way to connect.
Are angels different from guides who may have incarnated? Some people say that since our beginnings as a soul, we have guides that help us. And I wonder if they're different from the angels.
They are in my experience, yes. So guides, yes, have incarnated on Earth. We've often had a past life with them. They are usually an expert in something that we need help with or that in this their purpose in this life. So I also believe that we have a guide that's with us throughout our life, but we can have what I call situational guides. And so if we're working on a specific thing, we might get a guide who knows about that to come and help us with it. A great example of that is when one of our daughters was doing a PhD. And she was going to, she said, Mom, I think maybe hopefully there's going to be a guide that's going to help me with this. And we tried very hard and figure out who this guide was. And we were trying to get a name. And I said, well, it's sort of like Margie, but it's not Margie. And finally we figured out it was RG, as in research guide. And it was lovely. And this guy was enormously helpful to her. She worked with the original manuscripts in England. She got into places in these libraries where she should not have gotten, right? You know, and this guide was just really awesome. So we do get those kinds of guides. We don't need to be in touch with them all the time when we're working on research. Sure.
What about? Go ahead.
I was going to say the difference between a guide and an angel to me is that angels are messengers of the divine. So they hold that wisdom. The guides are the messengers of wisdom, but they're often a lot more incorporated, you know, so they have experience about this kind of event in a life, this kind of event. And their energy is different when I see it. And guides will often show themselves to me as the person that you knew in the lifetime you shared with them. So if you are working on a fear of snakes and you lived a lifetime with this person in the Amazon with all of the wild variety of snakes that are there, I will see them as a South American, indigenous person, often those kinds of things. And that helps us to put those together.
Mm-hmm. When When you met your husband, let's say, did you feel there was guidance involved in meeting him?
Yes, absolutely. And it's one of those things that when you look back and you see the train of things that brought you together, it's really quite amazing. And there are times when guidance to me says it's time to leave a relationship, and it's time when guidance says it's time to look, to pursue this relationship. So it's not always the, star-crossed lover syndrome.
Soulmate.
Exactly. It's finding that. And people get very frustrated. I get lots of people who come and say, I'm not meeting someone. Why am I not meet? What's the matter with me? And it's oftentimes, especially older souls, wait to find that person until they've fully grown into their soul age and who they are. So the fact that you didn't meet somebody at 23, like, four of your best friends, doesn't mean there's anything wrong with you. It just means that that will develop over time for you.
Another class of people who can help us is departed spirits who are not incarnated. And you do medium work. How do you access them?
They come. So they just sometimes they just show up. Or if somebody comes and they say, I really wish I could connect with my sister, then often their invitation of that soul, and so somebody shows up, I don't know who they are until they tell me, or sometimes they don't tell me, and I just describe them so that the person that I'm with says, oh, that is my sister. Because you couldn't have known what my sister looked like. But if you can tell me what my sister looks like, then I know that that's who we're connected with. More and more, spirits are, I mean, they're just so happy to come to connect. The way that I understand it, the way from what they tell me, when we get off plane, which is what I call crossing over, we're off this earthly plane. We don't suddenly become all wise and all knowing, but we certainly have a different perspective. We get to pull in all of the knowing that we've had from earlier lives and things like that. And so their personality will not necessarily be exactly the same as it was here, but they can certainly give us lots of information that helps the person who's with me understand that, oh yeah, that's exactly what we did. And connect easily with them.
Some people say that it's really a great advantage to be on Earth because it's dense and you can work through your lessons faster and they have more freedom and can manifest really easily on the other side. What's your sense of what it's like on the other side?
Well, from what they tell me, it's awesome. It's a very different experience. Yes, we come to Earth to work on things, to advance our soul, so that the lessons that we learn but we incorporate them and we embody them in this lifetime. On the other side, we've got a much bigger picture to work with. So we're working with all of the lifetimes. We're working with, from what I understand, we do a life review when we cross over. And we look at what did we learn in this lifetime? What do we do really well? Where were we just maybe a little less than stellar? All of those kinds of things. And so when we give a firm understanding of that, then we put it into the bigger picture yet of how does this fit with all of the learning that I've done in other lifetimes? What piece was it that I was working on here? And then again, looking forward to say, okay, knowing all of that, what would I like to work on next time? How would that, what piece would my soul benefit from me learning and working? And then we start to look for that perfect situation and opportunity and the people that we want to come with. Sometimes because time is completely a construct of this world. Somebody figured out how long it takes for the Earth to go around the sun and divided it up into a bunch of, categories. That is true over there. So their sense of time is very different. And so the sense of, well, how long before we reincarnate? It's really a non-issue. It has to do with when the situation is right.
The University of Virginia, the studies of children who remember their past life, I was really interested. They said that of the 2,500 kids that they've studied, the average duration, they only waited like 4.5 years to come back in, which really surprised me because I've always read that we could have thousands of years between incarnations. But a lot of these kids, I think over 2/3 had violent deaths. So I guess they felt incomplete and wanted to complete what they didn't have a chance to work through.
Yeah, I also think that especially the kids that were in that study, which was awesome, by the way, I think they were helping us to learn about past lives. So if they didn't come back in a short time, where as children they could still tell what had happened and help people find the grave of the person they murdered and help, all of those kinds of things, I think that they were really helping all of us. So perhaps they agreed to come back in a fairly short order to do that. I also know that we don't have to come back in that time. I think that there are people who take a very long time. Sometimes I think it depends on the magnitude of our soul purpose when we're here. If we've chosen and set up a really difficult life for a very good reason, it takes us longer to, on the other side, to process that and to figure out what, has happened and what we can learn. And that's okay because time is no issue over there. There's no factor. And so I think it has to do with a lot of things, but I love that those children came back so that it could be documented because those families were very clear. There's no way this child would have known this.
They were
That
so
helped.
detailed. What about
Yeah.
you? Do you remember past lives that are pertain to this lifetime, your, let's call it, karmic lessons in this lifetime? And if so, are you willing to share one?
Sure. I think, well, one of the things as I learned to do, I do past life regressions with people. So as you learn to do that, you get to experience lots of them. And so I, at one point, I went back to a lifetime where in, and it was the plague. And I was that crazy woman out in the street boiling things because I certainly believed that if you boiled the sheets and everything else, that's what I needed to do to save my family. And I was convinced of it. And people thought I was nuts. I mean, honest to goodness, what is she doing? The reality is that my family did live through the plague. We made it through. It had nothing to do with, isn't that awesome? Didn't I do well? It had everything to do with in this lifetime, as I started to work with people and work with healing, I had to learn that what I did now was not a life and death situation. That lifetime informed me of that, right? Back then it was life and death. I had to have that intensity about me because it was critical. I don't need that intensity. In this lifetime, I needed to learn to flow with this, to let it be and let it be much easier and those kinds of things. The key that was big for me in that one, I am not somebody who remembers dates in history well. I know that there have been several plagues in Europe. If you asked me when the plague was, I wouldn't have been able to tell you. But in a past life regression, they say, tell me what year it is, just take the first year that pops into your head. And so I gave them a year, and they, of course, they wrote this all down. And afterwards, I thought, I'm going to go check that out because if that's not right, then I don't know about this. It was bang in the middle of one of the plagues in Europe. So it really helped me to have that confidence that we can access that information and we can do those things. And for me, it was a very helpful understanding.
What about you? Have 5 children, you have a husband. Do you have memories of being with them before so you could complete or have fun with them in a different way?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So this is the second marriage for me currently. I gave birth to 3 of the children, and 2 were gifted to me with this second marriage, and they are all very much our kids. But it's fun to be able to go back and find those lifetimes where we have known each other before. So that as we, even in coming together in this lifetime, we've known each other, which is wonderful. To me, it helps with that sense of people say, oh, well, stepchildren, stepfamilies. No, this is just part of what is. And it's wonderful. I teach, or until COVID hit, I taught a series of workshops with a really wonderful colleague. And we called it On the Spiritual Path. And one of the things that we did was we would take people back to find some of those lifetimes. So if you weren't leading that particular part of the workshop, you got to do it too. And in one of those, I discovered that in one lifetime, two of my daughters and I were stonemasons who helped to build some of the great cathedrals of Europe. And it was lovely because we were working together in a very different, but we just knew each other in that time, in that way. And you can see how, and one of them was the architect who, and she, in this lifetime, she's the most organized person you've ever met in your life. One was the visionary, you know, and she's very much like that, you know, and it's like, isn't this awesome? Just being able to pull those together.
You think of yourself as clairaudient, clairsentient. How do you protect yourself from being empathetic and taking on people's troubles, like people that you work with in sessions? How do you keep from getting overloaded?
So for me, it is that is my task. My task is to keep my energy and my field clear so that I do not pick that up. I work with my own energy field. I balance my field. I balance my own energy. I make sure that I clear, and it's really easy. It's not hard. It's not something that has to be a you know, literally, if we tell ourselves ground, after we've learned to ground and we've grounded for years and years, as we ground, that energy just leaves. Or I will ask, any energy that's not mine or not in my best interest, I'm inviting you to leave. After my clients leave, I hand them back to their high self, to their best, you know, to a greater energy that I'm not kidding myself has far more ability to be of help to them than I can be, but I give them back to something greater. And so it's a very simple thing for me, but it's important. It's very important.
That's why we do this little snap of the fingers to clear. It's a really easy, quick way to separate.
Exactly. And when you set your intention that that's what that's about, it happens so easily, it's wonderful.
What led you to be a chemistry major in university?
Well, at first I thought, for years, I thought, oh, what a mistake. Why did I do that? When I look back, so what led me there originally was I knew that I wanted to help people and I was thinking about medicine. And so I liked sciences. It was the 70s. You know, women should be in sciences. There was a lot, and the one I liked best was chemistry. So why should I not do that? It was a great lead into medicine at that point in time. Got into it. I liked chemistry. It was great. I loved the learning. I loved all of those things. But at that time, you had to take another an elective from a different discipline. And I took psychology, and I immediately knew I was home. That was far more what I should be doing than the chemistry, but I couldn't afford to change majors. What I know now is that chemistry allowed me to get a great job. It allowed me to basically support our family as my husband began a company, which then allowed me to stay home with my children, which is what I really wanted to do when they were young. And you can see how it all fit. So my joke now is that I went from chemistry to alchemy.
That's great. You went on to get a graduate degree from Holos University. People who don't know about them, what's that about?
Oh, Holos is a wonderful place to study. So it's actually Holos University Graduate Seminary. And it is very much about connections. It's about connecting the science and the spirituality and all of the techniques that we can use and all of the things that make this, it's about understanding from a bigger perspective, about putting all of those pieces together. And I loved the time that I spent there. When they ask me, they always ask you at the beginning, what is one word that, what are you after? And the word that came out of my mouth without thinking about it was synthesis. So I wanted to synthesize, pull together, make and understand both the science, which again, when I look at being at Holos with a chemistry degree, it means that I can talk to the scientific community easily because I speak that language too. But I really wanted to have the full underpinning of a graduate degree so that I didn't want to be seen as flaky or fluffy or, I wanted to be grounded in this work. I feel that as we ground beautifully on this planet, incorporating both of those pieces, the gifts are better understood, better accepted, and easier to work with. So it was wonderful. Also, you meet the best people. Just people with such a wide variety of life experiences and spiritual experiences and where they want to go with this and where they want to take it. And people that I graduated with, we've done such different things, but all of them are incredibly valuable in this world. So it was just a really excellent experience for me.
Was it mostly a hybrid model where you did a lot of it online because it's in Missouri? Is that where the headquarters are?
Well, when I did Holos, we had two campuses, one in Missouri and one in Kansas. Now it is at Unity in Kansas City, yes. And so it was hybrid, but that was the gift. I mean, as I started thinking about this, if you had looked at it logically, now let's think about this. We have five children, four of them who are in higher education at this point in time, and I think it's a really good idea to fly to the States so that I can do graduate work. You would have said, this is nuts. But because we went down spring and fall, once, for about a week, 10 days at a time to do the classroom part, the hands-on part, all of those sorts of things, and everything else was online. So yes, now this was early days of internet when I did this, and so I did it all on dial-up. I can't quite imagine how I did that now, but at the time it was just what I did. And so, but it was a huge gift because even as you think about sending all of these big papers, as we shared papers and all of those sorts, it was wonderful because you could read all of the things that people had written, and also as our professors. We had chats. We could all be online and do chats. It was like, how great is that? So to me, that was part of that timing. If it had been that I had to go down for months and months at a time, I probably wouldn't have done it. I
No.
really wouldn't have. But the internet had come in. It was just, Holos was forward thinking enough to say, this is what we're going to do. And the timing was perfect.
Were most of the students women?
I would say yes, predominantly, but there were quite a few men in my classes as well. And it was really nice to have that combination.
Why do you think it is like in the workshop that I did with you, it was only one man and the rest women, and that's pretty typical. Do you have any ideas about why women are more likely to be in these spiritual learning situations?
I think it's a combination of a lot of things. I think that it's more acceptable, probably societally acceptable for women to do that. It's harder for men to often give up a very good job and say, I kind of want to go explore this, because men are expected to be, or traditionally have been expected to be, perhaps the breadwinners and things like that. They might get more pushback from their peers. I don't know. I do know that the men who are willing to do this and willing to be involved are wonderful. And I'm hoping that they light the way for others. So that, although when we look at it, a lot of the physicists, the quantum physicists now are the ones who are providing great underpinning for the spiritual awareness that we have. And a lot of them are men. So hopefully there'll be a nice crossover with that.
In my trilogy about visionary scientists who are doctors and scientists doing the exploration of psi, PSI, most of them were men. So
Yeah.
that's going to take a time, a while to change. Speaking of quantum physics, it seems to me that that's the explanation of why we have telepathy or healing prayer from a distant work, all the kind of psi phenomena are explained by this quantum field. What's your thoughts about, and explain it to people who don't know what quantum physics is.
Quantum physics is wonderful, and quantum physics is helping us to understand. So to me, it is the explanation, as you said. This has been happening for centuries and forever that people have had knowing. Quantum physics says it's about possibilities. It's about how does this work? Can we understand how the structure of our universe operates in a way that can allow this kind of knowing? And the answer is very much yes. And for a very long time now, they have been working on that, to be able to say, how can somebody who is, you know, thousands of miles away, how can they influence? And they were very good. They've worked very hard to be within the parameters of an excellent investigative study. And so when all of those things fall into place and they say, yes, even though we can't explain it, we know that it happens, then all of a sudden science again says, well, then let's figure that out. Let's see if we can figure out that next step. And there are some really wonderful discoveries being made at this point in time.
It seems to me that non-locality is the key, that there's no time, no space, that once particles or people or whoever is entangled, they're in communication through this information field, which they don't really understand what it is, how this communication is, the mechanics of it.
Well, we don't know yet. But I think that's exactly where we're working right now, where the scientists are working to understand. That's going to be that next piece that they will put in. And I think that you're right. And part of it for me is to say to all, we can all access that field. We live in that field. We're not taught that we can. We're not taught that that's something that has value, or that why would we bother? But we can do that. And so knowing that, and being able to access that field where there is no time and there is no space. And that's how. I mean, if we can live in that, then we can access all things. And that's pretty amazing. That's lots of fun.
You know, it's not just, to me, it's amazing that it's not just information that is transported. It's, you can physically change cell growth or the rate at which yeast release oxygen, or they're Chinese children who can teleport little objects from one place to another. So people don't believe in psi because it violates the physics of the big world that we know, and it seems too weird or spooky, which people have applied those words to quantum physics, because it is weird and spooky in terms of our physical material world.
Right. Except that when we say it violates those physical laws, it doesn't. It violates Newtonian laws, for sure. But that's very old physics. And so it doesn't violate a lot of the quantum and the, you know, all string theory and all of those kinds of things. So it's part of what we've been taught. It violates what we've been taught about, but it doesn't violate the actual laws of the universe and the world. And so part of it is that science is helping us to catch up with that and change how we see that. So that, because belief is a big part of it. If you don't believe you can, you won't. So it's really easy for somebody who doesn't believe in it to say, I tried, it didn't work. What do you want? Whereas somebody who says, but I do believe, or even, I don't know how I do it, but I do it. People that, you know, that can do the teleporting and can things like that. Well, I don't really know. I just set my intent to do this. I don't know how it works, but I know that I can do it. So somewhere between those two, as those meld, we're going to have much greater information.
It's exciting. It's a good time to be alive. Our spirits were smart to come in now.
Yes.
When you call your practice life energy balance, what does that mean to you? If someone comes to you, what can they expect?
It's different with every client I see. So life energy balance for me is about that sense of balancing. I believe that when we are in balance, we have access to our best self. And so it can be physical balance, emotional balance, mental balance, spiritual balance, a combination of all of those, because they inform each other. And so balance is something that our world understands. People, when they say, I feel out of whack, I just don't feel like myself. And they understand that sense of coming back into balance. So to me, it was a way of talking about what I do without trying to get into a gazillion specifics, because I don't do one thing. I feel like over decades, I've created a toolbox. And there's all kinds of things in that toolbox. And when people come, I don't know for sure which one they want. I don't want to say, oh, I only do therapeutic touch. I only do one of these things, because that would be limited for me. So oftentimes when they come because they have been frustrated for a very long time. Things aren't working out and they don't know why they're not working out. And or there's something they want to learn about and they don't know where to learn this. Or there's they've had experiences that they don't understand. They don't have language for those experiences. And so in the beginning, I got a lot of people who would come with physical issues. So I worked with balancing the physical field. That's not my love. My love is far more working in the emotional, spiritual fields. But it was a great thing to learn and to know and to be able to work with, for sure. Now, at this point in time, if I think that somebody really needs that physical work, I'm much more likely to send them to someone else who would do that. Whoops, sorry. being able to work with that sense of balance overall. So do I balance energy? Sure. But it's more about their balance. I don't do things. It's not about me. It's very much about them. And as I think back over a lot of the different tools that I use, that is an underlying tenet of most of the modalities that I work with, most of the things that I do. You know what is true in your world, your body, your spirit, your mind. You know how to heal. If we can remove the blocks, if we can get out of our own way, if we can, you know, free up the energy that we need to do that, we all have it. And so that's very much one of the premises that I work from.
Mm-hmm. Do you see layers of the aura and chakras? Does that help you in your work?
It does, very much. So people say, you know, isn't that overwhelming in the world? I am very good at turning it on and turning it off. To me, it would be very intrusive to walk around this world and take in that kind of information. And it would be, disrespectful. But when somebody comes to me and is saying, you know, can you help me? Then seeing those things is very helpful for me as I, you know, work with them. And so when you see that they are struggling in relationships and their heart chakra is completely closed, there's a really helpful piece of information there. And working with why did it close? Because chakras close usually protectively. So where did that come from? What was that? And it probably closed protectively and with really good intent when it happened. But looking at how we can shift that at this point in time. And so that's just one example of things that make a difference and are very helpful. Also with the fields, if our fields aren't lined up, then the energy doesn't get through well. So if you imagine the fields as a series of funnels that all feed down into each other, if one funnel is tipped, that energy isn't getting down through. So realigning those fields, which is a simple thing to do, and I can teach people to do it for themselves, which is even more important, then all of a sudden they're getting this energy through and they are informing themselves about things like that. So it's really great.
Barbara Brennan sees the first layer of the aura like blue vertical lines. But when you're talking about funnels, do you mean the chakras or do you mean the auric field you see like funnels?
I see the energy coming through the fields as funnels. I do see the outside lines too. Although one of the best things I ever learned, and this was when Carolyn Mace was a professor at Holos, and what she said is, she talked about her own experience as a medical intuitive at that point in time, and she said, I got things in threes. The first time it was new, I didn't know what it was. I had to figure it out. The second time I had to say, oh, I think I've seen this before. What was that? And the third time it's like, I know what this is. But she said, when you see it, you have to learn to interpret what you see. Don't let somebody else tell you it should look like this, because it's just the energy's way of informing you, and your background and your understanding and your interpretation will all come from that. And that was so helpful for me, because I don't see it the way some of the books would suggest, perhaps. I very much see it in a way that is, it's the way I've always seen it, but I know what it means. But when she said that, I'm like, ooh, that's so true. I do get things in threes. And so you start paying attention and you start learning, and it's really helpful.
Do you see with your ocular vision, or do you see in your mind's eye?
Both. And it really depends on how they give me that information. So if it is somebody who has passed over that I'm trying to describe, I will see with my, you know, across from my chair is in my office is a strip of bare wall. It's really easy for me to see them against there. It's really helpful. There are times if I'm seeing a past life, perhaps, I'm much more likely to see that in my mind and just get that information and things like that. So it really just depends on how I'm given it. I need to stay open to how it comes.
But sometimes you may see with your physical eyes, oh, there's this color or this shape in there.
Absolutely.
Let's talk about some of the different modalities that you use. Therapeutic touch was developed by nurses, and they think of bringing energy in like a rainbow through their shoulders, out their hands. How would you describe therapeutic touch?
It's actually a little different than that. It's a hands modality. You can do it hands on. You can do it hands off. So even though it's called therapeutic touch, you don't necessarily touch.
It's like Reiki.
Exactly. Very much. And as far as I'm concerned, all of the modalities, we're working with the same energy. It just seems to be which modality seems most appropriate at that given point in time. So when I hear, so for therapeutic touch for me is, it's evidence-based. It's a modality that's based on working with the hands to help balance that energy. But we innately know once the energy is balanced, then our body is able to access the wisdom that it needs to do our own healing. We don't heal anybody with therapeutic touch. We allow them to heal themselves. Yeah.
Right. When you do past life regression, is it kind of like a hypnotic process? That most people, I think, use a hypnosis to regress the person to a past life.
I probably wouldn't call it hypnosis, but it is a deep reverie. We go into a very quiet, very calm state. And I just do that with guided imagery. And then through that, yes, we go back. And I find that it's very often, it's very helpful for somebody to actually experience that life themselves. I could tell them about it, but I don't think it has the same power. Now, in a crisis, when somebody needs to really know something, I'm happy to say, this is what I'm getting. But to me, they will get so much more information when they actually experience those past lives themselves. So, no, I'm not a hypnotherapist, so I don't, you know, use traditional hypnotherapy, but I certainly use very relaxing guided imagery to go into that meditative space.
I think it's Brian Weiss who uses past life regression to clear out, like, I'm phobic about water. Because, oh, I drowned in that past. Have you had cases like that?
For sure. To me, anything that we've worked on and it doesn't make sense in this lifetime, it really may be because it didn't come from this lifetime. A great example of this would be a client I worked with many years ago, and she came and she said, you know, I think maybe I'm the worst wife ever. And I said, why do you think that? And she said, I cannot stand vomit. She said, if somebody is sick, like, so she said, my husband got the flu and I had to leave. Like, what kind of a wife is that? In going back, she went back to a lifetime somewhere in the Middle East in a nomadic tribe, and they were setting up camp. And she, and at that point, she was male. She was the head of this tribe. So in that life, he was organizing the setting up of the camp and things like that. But they'd been traveling for a few days and they had set up camp beside a well. People were getting water and doing all those things. And suddenly everybody started being sick. The well was tainted, but they didn't know it. Now, he didn't get sick because he hadn't drunk the water, but he watched so many that he loved die. Well, you can see where that would come from. But the gift of the past life regression is knowing that was then, this is now. And that, you know, we don't need to live in that same terror that we did in that other lifetime, or we don't need to carry that burden. It's really helpful for clearing those kinds of things.
Right. Well, I've never heard of biocomputer operating system, BOS. What is that?
It is a wonderful technique that basically works to clear the blockages, the energy blockages that we have in an energy field, so that our body can do what it needs to do to heal. It's a very in-depth balancing system. And it's now, I had to laugh, you know, the things we continue to learn. It was BOSS when I learned it, the biocomputer operating system. It's now called the Steele technique because it was developed by father and son, Harvey and Larry Steele. And so now they're calling it the Steele technique. So if people are looking for it, that's what they would find.
It's S-E-A-L?
S-T-E-E-L. Their last name was Steele, yeah. And the biocomputer operating system actually is a very good description because it works with the energy field as a series of computer drop-down menus. So, and it uses muscle testing. So your muscle testing, where do we begin? How do, you know, what do we do with this? And there's a menu you work with. Okay, this is it. Tick, open that menu from here. Now, where do we go? And it very much works with the body's innate sense of the ability to heal, and that what we're trying to do is remove the blockages so that the body can do that.
Mm-hmm. Muscle testing can be tricky because if you're not balanced, you can get the opposite of what's true. So what do you teach people in terms of how to get accurate muscle testing?
So first of all, believing that you can do it is a big deal. Being balanced, I wouldn't muscle test for someone else or for health reasons and things like that without being well-grounded, well-balanced. So again, I just go back to that sense of I ground, I release energy that's not mine, because it's usually the energy that's not mine that will switch the information, and go from there. I like to keep it simple and very accessible.
Got it. What about Norm Shealy's sacred rings? How do you use that?
I don't use them as much as I used to. I love those rings because they are basically taking all of the wisdom of acupuncture and distilling it into these five rings that he intuited, that he came up with, that have very different purposes, but they all have to do with getting the energy moving in the body in a way that supports health and longevity and wellness and the increasing of the telomeres, those little tips on the RNA that have to do with longevity and our health and things like that. Also, as Norm developed them, he realized that we don't have to use acupuncture needles to activate those points. Oh, and wait, we can just use acupressure. Oh, wait, we can just use like he's just really made it very easy to use them. So if people come for a very specific reason, or somebody who says, I know my thyroid is out of whack, but medicine doesn't seem to be able to help me with this. One of those rings is very dedicated to the endocrine system. And so sometimes things like that can just make a difference. It's, you know, they say, oh, just a little nudge. We're just a little out of whack, but it can make a very big difference in your experience.
What does ring mean? Is it a shape? Is it an activity? I don't know what a ring is.
Ah, yeah, it's a shape. If you were going to put those acupuncture points on a body, you would see a ring. So as you activate them, you would activate them in order of this ring as it goes around. So yes, you would see that. The different points are activated in a way that forms a ring throughout the body, a circle. So it's getting that energy moving in that way.
And do you activate by tapping, as in energy psychology, like emotional freedom technique, or how do you activate the points in the circle?
You can do it a lot of different ways. So you can actually, if you are an acupuncturist, you can use the needles. You can use acupressure, which would be like the tapping very much. And really the tapping in my world activates those meridians. So the tapping is more of a overall approach. Let's activate all those meridians as we go through looking at this issue so that the one that is needed will operate and be able to do that. The rings are a little bit more specific, but it's the same idea for sure.
Do you use emotional freedom technique in your practice?
I
Tapping?
do. I do. I think people find great comfort in feeling there's something they can do, that the tapping gives them that sense of there's something that I can physically do here that helps them. Again, I think it just keeps the left brain happy sometimes, that brain that wants to know and follow and do. It gives them that ritual to follow. But it's also activating those meridians as it goes. So yeah, it's a great way, and it's also very good for phobias and fears and things like that.
PTSD.
Yeah.
Are there any other of your favorite tools that we haven't talked about?
I love, well, the inner counselor process. It's what I used for my dissertation at Holos, and again, it's a way of accessing your inner knowing. When someone's trying to help you, and in the back of your head, you're saying, yeah, but you don't know this and you don't know that. And so you sort of doubt that. When you work with someone's own inner knowing, they don't have that because they are working with themselves. And it's a symbolic and spiritual process, and I love it. I also work a lot with soul ages, helping people to understand what they're working on. What is their soul working on in this lifetime? Because it makes a big difference in so many things. If you're struggling with a relationship and you realize that you're just at very different soul ages and that that person is doing exactly what they came to do in this lifetime, it takes out that sense of, well, they should be doing this, or I want them to be doing that. And the same thing with understanding your own soul age, to say, oh, wait, if I'm an old soul, I want to be working on spiritual things. I don't want to be doing the physical things that other people that are perfect for other people. So to me, it gives a great sense of peace. It brings that sense of peace and understanding. It takes out a lot of blame in our world, which makes me happy. And understanding where that person is and respecting where they're at. And knowing that we can be in different places and both be doing exactly what we should be doing.
So, do you think someone like Donald Trump, who is so sick and so selfish and so disturbed, is he a young soul? Or what explanation would you have for someone who could be so uncaring about other people?
I honestly think he's somewhere between a baby soul and a young soul. Baby souls have one task, and that is, if I'm going to live on this planet, what are the rules? And some of them will do it by following every last rule very nicely, and some will do it by pushing every last button. Baby souls very much are black and white, my way or the highway. They're very into it's not fair, it's not what I want. They're very, that's their focus. Young souls are about climbing the ladder, getting to the top, being the best, all of those kinds of things. And he certainly shows aspects of that too. That sense of, I want America to be great. It has to be best. I have to be best. All of those sorts of things. But understanding that that's what his soul is about, if that's what he came and that's his soul age, then expecting him to suddenly become interested in the well-being of large groups of people is probably not very productive. And so it helps to understand where he is. Does it mean that this is a good thing for the United States? No. It means that he is showing us one aspect of what is true there. And hopefully, and clearly, the American people said, we think we kind of want to make a change here. And Biden is not a young soul. Biden is much more of a mature soul.
So there's baby and young and mature, or are there other stages too, or the three?
Nope, there's five altogether. So infant souls are They come, they're basically trying to figure out if they can live on this planet. So they don't often live very long lives. They could be SIDS babies. They could, you know, live in war-torn countries where, you know, their life expectancy is not long. They're just figuring that out. And then baby souls are figuring out the rules. Young souls are figuring out how to climb the ladder and thrive. Mature souls are working on relationships of all kinds and how that works. And again, they will sometimes learn it by having wonderful relationships, and they'll sometimes learn it by having tough ones. And then there are old souls, and old souls are far more into the spiritual aspect of things. And they like to put things together. Old souls are less invested in any one thing and then the big picture.
Do you think?
And their task is unconditional acceptance, a big one.
Do you think that some people say that as souls evolve, they eventually kind of blend into the Godhead and become one with higher source? I don't know. I mean, where do you think is the ultimate destination for this evolutionary process?
Yes, I do. I believe that we go back to source, to creator. You know, we came from there. We cycle back through every so often, and eventually we do go back. And but we take with us all of the learning and the knowing and the wisdom that our soul has accumulated, and we add that to that body of wisdom that is creator. And yes, I believe that that's what happens. I think that once we have completed everything that we came to, that our soul needs to complete, so all of our lifetimes, and we go back, then we don't have to come back again, but we can choose to come back. And those are what we think of as the ascended masters. You know, Jesus and Buddha and Muhammad and Allah and, you know, all of those. They are the ones who came back because they could serve. They came back to help. There's a really great comic. I think it's Jesus and Muhammad sitting on a cloud, or maybe it's Buddha, one or the other. And there's chaos going on the earth below them. And they say, okay, fine, which one of us will go this time? It's great.
Let's draw straws.
Exactly. Is it your turn or mine? But those wonderful souls that will come back for no purpose for themselves, but to serve and to help humankind.
As you have developed your practice, have you seen changes over time in the presenting issues? Like, it seems currently anxiety is a big issue. What have you seen over time?
For sure. Although I'm not sure how much of it is that what people understand about me. So I get the people that understand what they understand about me and how much of it's out there. Right now, for sure, I'm getting a lot of people. What the anxiety is doing is it's presenting for different people in different ways. So somebody's anxiety goes up and they get sad. They just want to cry. Some people's anxiety goes up and they get angry. Anxiety goes up and they don't know what to do with it. They don't even know what they're feeling. I say that there's this sort of this free-floating anxiety out there right now. And how it affects different people is different. So that's current. What I'm finding, though, is when people used to come for a lot more physical reasons, and now I am getting far more of the emotional, spiritual aspect of things. And I think, and I don't have a website. I have a very full practice as it is, and I don't know that I could, you know, I'm not looking for the kind of, to grow a business or something like that. So it's just word of mouth, and perhaps it's the people who, you know, so maybe that's why I'm getting different people. If you have an emotional, spiritual experience here, the people you tell about that will work on that too, possibly.
Is there a way that people who are listening to us can contact you if they would like to do, you know, like a Skype or Zoom session with you?
Sure. The easiest way to get a hold of me is through my email. And so emailing me, we can set that up. It's one of the gifts of this time. I've gotten so good at these different platforms that I really wasn't good at before. I didn't know that much about them. And so, yes, it's a wonderful way to be able to access people from all over.
And what is your email?
So my email is ann@lifeenergy.ca. So it's Ann without an E, just A-N-N at lifeenergy, the way it sounds, L-I-F-E-E-N-E-R-G-Y.ca. C-A.
Do you mind saying what your fee is?
Sure. I charge $100 an hour right now. A first session is usually an hour and a half because we're getting to know each other and work together. But really, it's just whatever multiple of that, in depending on the amount of time we spend.
Got it. Is there anything that we've left out that you'd like people to think about in terms of their soul development? Tiny little question for you.
The biggest thing is you can do this. We all have access. Find the people that will help you with that. Read, listen to, you know, I mean, now there's so much stuff on the web that you can access, but access with wisdom, because some of it out there is, look at the person that's giving this. If they are very egocentric and need to be seen as the guru, I'd be a little careful. If they are really just excited about helping people access that own wisdom, finding out what your soul is all about, it's kind of an exciting task in our world. And there are so many ways to do it. Find the people or the information that speaks to you and follow it through, and it's very life enriching.
Do you have a bibliography of some of your favorite books, like if someone wanted to know about the Inner Council or some of these processes that you could refer, we could give them a list?
Sure, absolutely. There are all kinds of things written about that. The Inner Counselor actually was written by Ann Nunley, who was professor at Holos. And she was a wonderful mentor for me. And I have, you know, so, but you can access that book. There are so many things written on all of these different things. Probably the hardest one to find would be TST, but that's on the web. There's lots of information about it on the web. So it's more and more we are getting a database, an information base that people can access.
Great. Thank you so much. This is really fascinating.
You are very welcome.